Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
Pick Your Poison, Volume 3, Story 1. My dad and I were living in a house that was built in 1910. The basement was extremely creepy and had no lights. There was a space about 3 feet high between the doorway and the first step. That space went directly under the house. I was on a weird sleep schedule, so I was usually up until 4 a.m. or so. On a nightly basis, I would walk past the basement door and see it open just a crack. Of course, my cat would be missing, undoubtedly, in the basement. I would have to step all the way down to that first step, squat down, and stare into the void under the house to coax her out. When she got close, I would have to stick my arms and grab her and leap out. One night, I was recording a vocal acoustic tracks for a cover song in a room near the basement door. I was the only one home. When I played it back in my headphones, "Oh Death, I would breathe my last," I heard a man's voice say the last word with me, breath. I replayed it several times, and it was definitely there. I immediately got the hell out of there, and as I passed the basement door, I saw it was open a crack. I figured my cat was down there again. Hopped down, scared, looked under the house, and called her. She was a Siamese, and her coat was kind of cream-colored. I saw something light moving around about 3 feet into the void. I was reaching in to grab her, and then I felt a cold draft hit my face. Right as that happened, I looked up to see my effing cat come to the doorway from the kitchen to see what I was doing. I grabbed that cat and sprinted out of there. I didn't sleep for about a week. Story number 2. The following is an account of my first encounter, and it was a few years ago. As always, when I tell this story, I use a disclaimer that I don't expect anyone that wasn't there to believe it. I certainly wouldn't had I not been there, but what I tell you is 100% absolutely true and accurate. It was 1988, and a friend of mine named Linda moved into her new house in Oakmont, Pennsylvania. The house was likely built in the 1940s in a blue-collar neighborhood of the small riverfront town just up from the Allegheny River from Pittsburgh. It was a two-story wooden frame structure with a stone basement, rather typical for mill town homes of that vintage. Many of Linda's friends from the office had helped out on moving day, including my friend Jim and me. With all of the heavy lifting done, everyone else had gone home. Jim, who I had known since junior high, and I stayed behind to reassemble the stereo while Linda and her daughter had gone to return the rental truck. As we sat there, plugging wires into the back of the components, we heard footsteps. It wasn't clear at that point just exactly where they were coming from. We thought maybe they had come from the basement steps. Jim turned to me and asked, "Did we lock the basement door after bringing in the washer?" I answered that I thought we had, but maybe it was unlatched and someone had entered the house. I should say that Jim and I were very protective of Linda and her teenage daughter. Jim grabbed the hammer and I pulled out my pocket knife as we made a beeline for the basement. When we got to the bottom of the stairs, we stood there looking stupid. There was nobody there, and the basement door was closed and locked. We laughed at what knuckleheads we'd been and started back up the basement steps when we heard footsteps again. This time they were very clearly coming from above us. So we charged back up the stairs, thinking that whoever had come in had somehow slipped by us and was now upstairs, and deployed in the first floor, only to find ourselves alone again. Jim turned to me as we heard the footsteps and shouted, "They're upstairs!" So I followed him as we ran up the steps to the second floor of the house. At the top of the stairs, Jim went towards the front of the house, and I followed the hall towards the rear. We checked out each room as we went. Except for the boxes of belongings recently moved in, they were empty. I closed my knife as we laughed at ourselves and our imaginations again. We returned to the living room and the half-assembled stereo system. As we sat in the living room working on the stereo, we heard footsteps once again. However, this time, we could tell exactly where they were coming from. The sound of the footsteps started at the north end of the very room that we were sitting in and walked towards the front of the house, stopping as they reached the front window. At the sound of the footsteps crossing in front of us, we could actually feel the floorboards moving under the weight of an unseen being. I looked at Jim and asked, "Did you feel that too?" He responded that he had, and we sat there in awe of what we had just experienced. We were not afraid as any rational person would have been, but more than anything, we were overcome by a sense of amazement. Jim suggested that we not tell Linda what had happened. After all, she was going to be here all alone with her daughter. Why should we scare her? Well, that would have been the end of it, but at work a few weeks later, Linda came to my office and said, "You know, the strangest thing happened the other night. I was in bed reading when I heard a knock at the door." Heather, her daughter, yelled down the hall, "Mom, someone's at the door." So I looked out my bedroom window and could see that there was nobody at the back door, so I got up and went downstairs to the front door. But when I opened it, there was nobody there either, and no footprints in the snow in front of that door. Strange, huh? She also said that sometimes her cat watched something invisible moving across the living room. At this point, I took her down the hall to Jim's office and asked her to repeat her story. After she told Jim her tale, we told her about our experience on moving day. At this point, I half expected her to freak out, but instead she said in a rather matter-of-fact voice, "Oh, the place is probably haunted. You could have knocked Jim and me over with a feather at this point." Gee, she was taking it well. That's when she told us how when she was young, way up in the hills of West Virginia, she and the other kids used to play with the ghost of a dead Civil War soldier. So living in a haunted house was no big deal. Linda had the house blessed. She was a devout Christian. And after a while, the strange events at Linda's house became fewer and further between until they just stopped. Eventually, Linda moved back to West Virginia, where she passed away after a long illness. But every now and then, I wonder if Linda doesn't pay a visit to her little house in Oakmont. Well, that's the story of my first experience. I should say that when this happened, I was working as a, for lack of a better term, investigator for a large engineering firm. So I was, and still am, somebody that doesn't jump to conclusions or immediately sees a supernatural explanation. Years later, Jim and I had another couple of experiences while visiting Gettysburg, but I suppose just about everyone does there. Story number 3. I grew up in a very small town in a house with a yard that I'd often play alone in as a young child. My mother didn't work, but was often occupied with other things, so I was left to myself. There was often an older woman who would be in the yard and watch me. She was there as long as I could remember, and I never felt anything but love and comfort with her. She would always stand and watch me. Sometimes she would come in my house and watch me too, especially when I felt scared or alone, but mostly I'd see her outside. She was there constantly with me. I never felt afraid, even though I didn't know her outside of her watching me. I never noticed or paid attention as to how she came or left my house, though I would notice when anyone else would arrive to our house, she'd be gone. I never spoke of her to others, even though I would speak of other babysitters. And I never spoke to her, even though I would normally approach a babysitter if I needed something. She never wore different clothes, even though everyone else I knew changed clothes. I saw her less and less as I aged. By the time I was 4, I had a little brother, and I'd carry him outside with me. The lady was not there whenever I'd bring him. Soon after I started school, I spent time with neighborhood kids outside. Even when I wasn't with them, though, the lady had stopped coming. I never asked where she went. I saw her a few more times in those young years. Each time when I was really, really scared or sad, she would stand at my bedroom door. I'd feel calm and safe again. When I was still rather young, probably in elementary school, I needed a photo of my mom when she was young. She opened a cabinet with an old family photo album so I could look. While flipping through, I found a photo of the woman who always watched me when I was little, in the dress she always wore. I still remember the feeling of shock when I saw it. The woman in the photo was my grandmother. She died shortly after I was born. My dad was too upset by her death to ever tell us about her, share photos of her, or anything of that nature. Apparently the dress she was wearing in that photo was her favorite. She was not buried in it or anything. From the moment I saw the photo, I never ever saw her again in real life. I never told anyone what I'd seen before. That, along with a few other similar weird experiences that didn't reoccur like this one, always left me confused. I looked for logical explanations as to how this could occur, but there are none. Why didn't I ever talk to her? Why didn't I ever ask my parents about her? Why didn't I ever introduce my brother to her? Why didn't I ask her why she never changed her clothes? I'd believe in my mind it was all made up, But how? I was just too little to have made that up. Next story. I've always been involved and have educated myself about the supernatural. But this experience in particular stands out in my mind. Not only because it was one of the most dangerous ones, but because it happened to a very good friend of mine. My friend's name, we'll call him Frank, was unfortunately going through an emotionally draining crisis with divorce from his wife and separation from his teenage stepson. At the time, he called his soon-to-be ex-wife and her son from a previous marriage. He had already moved out. Although Frank was relieved to finally be alone except for his Labrador Retriever, he had an unnerving feeling that he wasn't really alone at all. Something would constantly nod him that made him feel there was some sort of presence in the house, so much that it would actually stop him from sleeping at night. Frank called me knowing my background and interest in occurrences like this. He told me point blank that he felt there was something in the house, something that wasn't natural. I asked him about the events leading up to the time he started getting these feelings, and what he revealed was that he just found out his stepson belonged to the Church of Satan and was actually practicing black magic and satanic worship in the house. Frank found a pentagram of Baphomet, remnants of burnt black candles, and other paraphernalia in the stepson's bedroom. Now, we all knew that this kid was a problem child, but as the divorce unfolded, Frank became more clued into just how heavily he was involved in the occult. I became immediately concerned because I knew how dangerous something like that can be, especially when practiced by a novice such as a teenager. Strange happenings like unexplained bangs, door slamming, and most disturbingly, disembodied voices were heard almost nightly. On top of that, Frank thought he was going crazy when he began to see shadows move about the bedroom, and he felt he was being watched constantly. The voices were becoming more frequent. You couldn't quite make out what they were saying, but even more frightening was that it sounded as though they would argue over Frank's bed as he tried to sleep. The final indication that proved this wasn't all in Frank's mind was the fact that his Labrador began to jump on the bed and growl, bark, and pant in the corner where Frank would hear the disembodied voices. He would see the dog barking feverishly at nothing at all, just staring off at an upper corner of the room. Because of their intense senses, animals are extremely sensitive to the paranormal. In fact, it has been documented by one of the Vatican's top appointed exorcists, Father Gabriel Amorth, that animals are more aware of the supernatural than humans are. I really didn't think Frank was crazy, but when I got to his house, he mentioned that he also heard these voices coming out of the flue to the fireplace. The voices would spill out into the dining room where Frank would spend his nights at the computer. He showed me digital photographs he took of every room in the house. Quite the detective, but unfortunately nothing showed up in the pictures. It was almost as if these entities did not want to be seen, only heard, and this was their way of letting Frank know they were present. With Frank's permission, I wanted to walk around and feel out the place. He told me to just be careful in his stepson's old bedroom because there was still junk lying around that the kid left and that something was wrong with the heat, a red flag for an experienced investigator. I cautiously made my way up the stairs for the first time. The entire second floor was new, and I had never been to the house since the renovation. Slowly, I went from room to room, first Frank's bedroom, and then to the spare bedroom. I didn't notice anything unusual until I moved down the hallway. It felt as if the walls were starting to close in on me as I approached the stepson's bedroom. By the time I made it to the door, I knew something was wrong. When I walked into that bedroom, it must have been 30 degrees colder than the rest of the house. The air was thick and oppressive. It was hard to breathe. Then immediately I was struck by feelings of fear and dread that pervaded such a heavy atmosphere that I became nauseous. My heart began to pound. I got chills up and down my spine from a heavy, overbearing presence. I couldn't see it, but it felt like something was watching every move I made. This was no human spirit. This bedroom was infested by evil. There was something else I took notice of in the darkness. So dark, in fact, it was as if sunlight couldn't penetrate the windows in there. It was the middle of a sunny afternoon, and the shades were wide open. There should have been plenty of light. I felt danger. And although there may have been a human spirit that resided in here, something much stronger was in control. I believe this was a demon. Standing in the middle of that room felt like standing in the crosshairs of an expert marksman. Anyone who set foot in this house was in danger. I wasn't really sure of how long Frank had been victimized by a diabolical entity. But being the activity picked up dramatically in the last week means it was gaining strength. I needed to perform an emergency blessing. I had to let Frank know what was happening. This was bad, really bad. This was the only type of haunting that really shakes me at my foundation. When I got back downstairs to the dining room, Frank was sitting at the table anxiously awaiting a response from me. I didn't notice it before, but I did now. Frank was completely exhausted. The poor guy was too terrified to sleep. This was literally a drain put on Frank's own spirit. He was being oppressed by an entity that had been around since the creation of the world. As an attempt to calm him, I educated Frank on the phenomena happening and how we would remove this from his home. I believe this to be a case of infestation. Infestation is a term widely used and known to more experienced investigators, men of the cloth, and exorcists to say a place holds negative and inhuman entities. When a building or home is used for satanic rites and other occult practices such as witchcraft and black magic, these cases show themselves to be the hardest type to remove. What most people don't know is that these human entities, or better said, inhuman entities, wreak havoc in the home. With an immense evil influence that weighs down the atmosphere almost by its presence alone, the demon provokes malign troubles and focuses on breaking the will and possessing each person in the home. Separating and destroying the family unit is ultimate goal, and in this case, Frank was a sole target. When his moronic stepson recklessly dabbled in the occult, in my opinion, he opened a doorway that allowed the infestation. Through the laws of invitation, it allowed someone or something evil and unseen to lurk in the home. Usually the more experienced Satanist would invoke an entity to protect the place of worship. Fortunately, I didn't feel the stepson to be this advanced. I believe we still had a handle on this thing. I felt the urgency to start the deliverance. I knew it was only a matter of time before things would get even worse. There was a certain feeling of foreboding that ran through me as I made my way up the stairs to that bedroom. Every emotion in my body was telling me to leave. However, at that point in time, my faith was stronger than ever, and I knew what I had to do. Besides, who else was going to handle this? I had Frank carry the incense and follow me, repeating the prayers I recited. I told him no matter what happened, to keep the faith and to not stop praying. We entered that dreaded bedroom where who knows what lay in wait. I began the deliverance with prayer and a sprinkling of holy water, focusing my efforts over the entire room. I etched the cross over every window and door to protect the entrance against any evil that may enter there. It was very cold and unnerving in that bedroom. I felt like there was blatant hate emanating from the walls. I knew this demon despised the holy, and it despised me for bringing the light of the holy into its world of darkness. I couldn't help but feel like something terrible was about to happen to me, like being struck by an invisible punch or kick from whatever evil dwelled there. As we went from room to room, blessing and praying, I noticed every room had a small rectangular opening in the ceiling stuffed with insulation. I found out later that the central air conditioning was never finished. To keep the room sealed and to block out the foreign air, he stuffed these openings with insulation. Every room on the second floor was now blessed, and we continued down the stairs to the living room and then worked in the dining room. Finally, we took the blessing down to the basement, and without altercation, we were done. Frank felt a little more peace about everything, and maybe now he could get some rest. So with a handshake and a thank you, I was on my way out. I felt the emergency blessing was well done. Unfortunately, this would not last for long. Around 3 o'clock that morning, the mockery of the Holy Trinity at Frank's, all hell broke loose. It sounded like a freight train went running through the house. The dog went crazy, jumping up and barking feverishly. Frank opened his eyes and stared helplessly from his bed at the ceiling. It sounded like someone huge jumping up and down on his bedroom ceiling, then plodding back and forth. Moments later, a heavy shuffling like a large piece of furniture was being dragged from one end of the attic to the other, along with an unexplainable banging that shook the entire house. At that moment, Frank realized we had never blessed the attic. The next day when Frank went into the stepson's bedroom, it felt much warmer and the feelings of being watched were gone. However, when he looked at the ceiling, his heart sank. The pieces of insulation he had stuffed in the unfinished air conditioner openings were gone. Something pushed those pieces up and flung them clear across the attic, where they were later found. It was as if something was trying to escape the blessed bedroom and shot up to a place that was more suited for its shenanigans. Either way, I was the next thing on Frank's mind that day. He called and told me what happened early that morning. Frank needed to stay positive and continue with prayer until I could make it back. In a few days, I was ready. When I got to Frank's, the house was quiet and the dog was calm. Frank knew what had to be done. We entered the attic by upholstering and a set of stairs from the second floor hallway. It didn't feel to me the way to the stepson's bedroom felt the first time I walked into it. In fact, I really didn't feel any atmospheric oppression or sense of presence at all, which was a relief. Without wasting another minute, we performed the deliverance and tackled the attic. I was ready to put an end to all of this, and I knew Frank was as well. Systematically, we blessed the rest of the house, again right down to the basement. For whatever reason, this time we were both completely exhausted when we finished the blessing. It took every ounce of energy from me, physically and spiritually. As the moon reached the middle of the night sky, and as being devoid of energy and strength, I felt Frank's house was finally cleared. I left with a great feeling of piousness. Regrettably, that's not all I left there with. Whatever was forced out of Frank's house followed me home that night. I was weary when I got home, and immediately I got ready for bed. I crawled in, pulled the covers up, and closed my eyes. I couldn't have been asleep for more than 10 minutes. Suddenly, in a low, guttural tone, I heard a voice that growled, "John." Gaining volume and almost in a sing-song mockery, I heard it again, "Oh, John," right in my ear. I opened my eyes, and at that moment, I heard, "Hi, John," in a derisive tone. In a state of confusion, I didn't realize what was happening at that moment until I tried to move. I couldn't. I was paralyzed. Something was holding me down, something I couldn't see. It dawned on me that I felt the same terror in Frank's house. I realized whatever I chased out must have followed me home. The hair on my body stood on end. I was gripped with fear. My heart began to pound. I then heard a dark, maniacal laughter. It was laughing at my hopelessness and my helplessness. I began to pray fervently. The Our Father, in seconds I was released. My hands came together, and in a cold sweat I continued to pray. Then it was gone. Needless to say, it was not easy for me to fall back asleep that night. I sat up and wondered if it was going to terrorize me any further. Thankfully, I didn't have another visit that evening, and I am happy to say neither did Frank. Other than my three cats, I live alone. There was no one else in my home. Doors and windows were safely locked, and to be honest, I really don't scare easily. Once I divulged my experience to Frank, he agreed that it was probably the same entity trying to get even with me for evicting it. Frank said that the sound of the laughter was familiar, but he was never held down the frightening way I was. I guess this thing was a little enraged with me after it was expelled from Frank's house. I also included a picture Frank had sent me of his attic before we had blessed it. You can see a different kind of orb, one that is square instead of spherical, and better yet, some ghostly writing on a joist. You can clearly make out the words, "God." But after that, it's hard to say. If you ask me, it's a blasphemy, like, "God is this or that." And luckily, we never heard or experienced anything else. Next story. I used to work in a prison. My sergeant called me one day, tells me he doesn't care what I do between the yard closing and 11 p.m., but please cover the count on B North at 11. Okay, cool. Cut to 10 p.m. Everyone is on the block, yards are closed, and I'm hanging out at our Times Square area at the desk reading. Another officer is reading the back of his eyelids on the other side of the desk. Where he's sitting, he can see north and south. I can see east and west behind me, let's say. I hear someone walking up the hallway behind me. I don't think anything of it until I realize I don't hear keys or radio or anything, meaning not an officer. Inmates have to be escorted after 10 p.m. So I'm like, "What the?" and turn around. No one there. Maybe I just imagined it. I went back to my book. The guy sitting across from me asked who was coming. He'd heard it too. I told him no one. He shrugged and went back to inspecting his inner eyelids. Now it was close to 11 p.m., and the other officer has gone to his sub-basement. There's no one in the vicinity of where I was. I went to the block, and the control room guy wouldn't let me in. I don't want the block officer calling the sergeant, and the sergeant being like, "What? I have given you just one job." So, I run back to the desk I was at to call the block. I can see that area from outside the block. No one was there. No one had come through. I called in as I'm telling the guy I'm trying to get in and to let the control room know. Someone comes up in my other ear and loudly and forcefully whispers, "What are you doing?" I'm annoyed, and I wave my hand up in their general direction. I hang up, turn to yell at whoever it was, and no one is there. I could see all the halls. No one was in them. No one had been in them. I promptly sprinted to the block, and that's where I stayed until the relief showed up for that block. I didn't even want to stand in the hall or go back to the desk. But in truth, could you blame me? Next story. As a child, I spent summers at my grandparents' house in Montana. Every day, I'd spent my time at the local swimming pool, from open to close, excluding adult swims, which was 1 hour spent standing outside the fence staring at the water and lightning sights. In 1990, I had almost drowned in that pool. A kid was dunking me and not paying attention, and I lost all my breath and freaked out. Ran out of air and screamed as loud as I could underwater. It was a pretty traumatic experience. About 16 years later, I was in the military and on patrol somewhere in the Southeast Pacific. I had a dream that I was walking up to the pool and watching it from outside the fence. As I watched it, the pool's breathing was very strained. The water was slowly rising and falling like it was taking its last breaths. Then, with a final high rise in the water, the bottom cracked in half and all the water drained out. I had watched the pool die. After I got out of the military, I moved back to that same town. I went down to the pool and saw it was closed. Apparently what happened was that a sinkhole had developed underneath the pool and it buckled under its own weight and drained out. It had been closed for a year or so until it could be repaired. From a loose estimation of the timeline math, I had the dream of it dying about, if not, the same time that the pool had cracked in half. Ever since that incident, I've had a firm belief that there's more to the universe than we understand. There's more to consciousness. There's more to dreams. There's more to information traveling in the universe. Next story. I was a rookie cop when my brother committed suicide. He was one of my older siblings, but we were very close. He died in another state, and I had a lot of guilt then about not recognizing the signs. His remains were in bad shape by the time he was discovered, so it was a closed coffin service. About a week after he died, I was back at work one night, and my partner and I see a pimp pistol-whipping one of his girls. I jumped out, and the pimp sees me, and the foot chase was on. I was running after him, gun in hand, and he cuts through a narrow corridor under a building that leads to a courtyard in the middle. Right before I reach the courtyard, I hear, "It's okay," in my dead brother's voice. I hit the courtyard, and the guy is against the side pointing a gun at my head and squeezes the trigger twice. I froze for a millisecond and then started beating him in the head with my revolver. To this day, I don't know why I just didn't shoot him, cuff him and walk him back to the street and found my partner. I tell my partner about him squeezing the trigger, but not the voice I heard. We unloaded the gun, a .32 revolver, right there, and two bullets have stripe marks on them. We took the gun to the lab for testing. We told the tech the story. He put the two bullets with strike marks back in and shot them into the test tank. Both bullets fired. Next story. We used to live in a battered women and children's shelter when I was young, because my father was looking for us. It was an ugly divorce. Alabama gave him custody. Mom took us to Washington. One night, I looked in the mirror and saw a hairy demon looking back at me. I screamed and cried and ran to get my mom, who assured me it was a normal mirror. But that night, a kind-looking man that I can only describe as a ghost appeared at the end of my bed. He was there all night, but gone when I woke up in the morning. Then the next night, and the next night, he was there every night for 4 months. We never talked, he never moved, just stood guard. Then one night, he woke me up from my sleep, and I'll never forget how surprised I was, because I'd never seen him move or talk. He said, "He's coming, get out now." So we packed up the car and left the hotel for the night. The next morning, we went back to find out someone had broken in and gone room to room looking for someone. I never saw the ghost again after that. Next story. I used to live in an old two-bedroom, three-story walk-up for a time in my early 20s in Toronto. A few days after moving in, my roommate Mike chided me in the morning for banging on the wall that separated our bedrooms and pacing back and forth across the apartment at night. We just agreed he must have been dreaming, or it was sounds from other apartments, as I had done no such thing. We agreed that it must have been nothing and left it at that, but this became a regular nightly occurrence. Shortly thereafter, I started noticing at certain times in my own bedroom the cloying smell of cheap women's perfume mixed with a damp, musty smell. Imagine an old person's clothes left on a damp, musty basement floor near a little box that wasn't being changed often enough, and you get the idea. What made it even weirder is that I would be filled with a sudden horrible sense of foreboding a few moments before the smell would begin. Mike flaked out and left only 4 months into our one-year lease, which meant I was left footing the rent for the entire place until I could find another roommate. I decided to try and sleep in his bedroom shortly after he moved to see if things would get better. The very first night I slept in his former room, I had an incredibly detailed and realistic nightmare of myself standing in the dimly lit bathroom of the apartment and cutting my own face with a large shard of glass while staring into the broken bathroom mirror. It was only broken in the dream. Soon after that, I started to hear loud bangs at night and flushings of the toilet in the bathroom. Several times the hot water in the bathtub turned on full blast in the middle of the night. One of the freakiest things that happened not too long before I moved was the time I woke up by the TV blaring Poltergeist on City TV at about 2 in the morning. At that time, the channel would always play movies late at night, but the fact that the one time it was on my analog TV, which had to turn a knob to change the channel or the volume, or pull a knob to turn it on, had turned on by itself at full blast, was the one time a movie like Poltergeist was playing. Next story. When I was younger, my older brother and I would randomly see this tall, dark, shadowy figure wearing a top hat, think of Abe Lincoln, walk down the hallway in the house we grew up in. It had no distinct features, just a shadow, but standing in the middle of the hallway, it would always stop just outside our bedroom door and just stand there for a moment and continue walking down the hallway. Whenever we would run out into the hallway to see it walking away, it was always gone. I was always fully awake when I saw it. My brother said he woke up a few times and couldn't move with it standing at the end of his bed, then it would just disappear. We had an old German shepherd who would bark nonstop every time he saw it. We would see it a few times a month for years until my parents split up and my mom moved out. When we got older, I remember my brother and I both mentioning it happening to our aunt on my mom's side. One night when she was visiting us, and she turned as white as a ghost. She told us that when her and my mom were growing up, whenever my mom was around, she would always see the same thing at night. After that, we mentioned it to our dad, and he said the same thing. The entire time he was with our mom, he would always see the same thing. These sightings all happened in different states and different houses. I asked my mom about it once, and all she would ever tell me is that when she was little and lived in Massachusetts, she used to have a guy in a top hat follow her around. She said she never saw the shadow figure, though. She passed in 2012. I saw the top hat shadow about 30 minutes before she passed, then found out about her about an hour later. That was the first time I had seen it in more than 10 years, and thankfully it was the last time.